Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. We're so blessed that you join us today. Today's interview is going to tread in some areas that some may find a little sensitive. So if you have young ones around, I'm just going to give you a heads up right away. You might want to pause this until you're able to listen without worrying about the little ones. Yes, it's going to be that kind of interview. Today's guest is Joshua Shea. Now, I interviewed Josh a little over a year ago on the topic of pornography addiction in today's society. I asked Joshua to come back on the program to catch us up on his efforts to shed light in this particular area that's plaguing society today, and also because he has recently released and published a new book, which we'll be talking about. But first, let me just give you a brief background on Joshua. He seemingly had it all, a loving wife, two children, a supportive extended family. And in 2010, after nearly 15 years of working his way up the journalism ladder, he launched a lifestyle magazine in his hometown. Within a year, he was one of the founders of Central Maine's largest film festival, had won a seat on the city council in Auburn, Maine. Accolades, including receiving the key to the city and being called one of the next 10 people shaping Maine's economy by a state newspaper, also followed that. And while the public got one picture of Joshua, behind closed doors, his longtime mental health and addiction issues were festering. A workaholic by nature, he actively ignored the red flags surrounding his long-existing pornography and alcohol problems. Finding it easier to lose himself in a bottle of tequila and adult websites, his relationships with his family, colleagues, and friends grew distant, and his business ventures began to collapse. Then life, as he knew it, came to a screeching halt when he was arrested on a charge relating to encouraging a teenager to disrobe in a chat room in 2014. He was convicted and served 6 months in jail in early 2016. Following his arrest, he sought help and treatment through intense one-on-one therapy, group therapy, and inpatient rehab facilities. He then published a book titled The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships. And we discussed this book in his last interview, and I recommend you go back to episode numbers 318 and 319 to hear all about this background and what happened and how he's been shedding light on this area and ministering to others, as well as all about the book. Now, recently, as I said, Joshua published another book, which is why I wanted to bring him back on the program today. The new book is called He's a Porn Addict, Now What? An Expert and Former Addict Answers Your Questions. Joshua, thank you for your willingness to come back on the program to discuss this sensitive, but unfortunately a needful topic for today. I do appreciate your time.
And thank you so much for having me back on your show. It's always very appreciative when somebody's willing to give me the time to talk about this issue that's plaguing the world.
Yeah, amen. And, you know, other than that brief intro, tell us in your own words, who is Joshua Shea?
Well, you know, it's a tale of two people. There was the one who died the day that I was arrested, who had been steadily going downhill for years, who was full of repressed memories, full of maladaptive coping methods to deal with life, who was non-empathetic, who was basically just a giantly confused five-year-old working his way through life. Mm. And then there's the one who I am today, you know, almost 6 years later, who recognizes his place in the world, recognizes what he's supposed to be doing, recognizes how to be a quality family man, and is trying to make up for that last person and giving back to the world through my pornography, addiction, education, and activism.
Amen. Now, for those that did not listen to our prior interview, briefly tell us the circumstances surrounding how you fell into porn addiction and your arrest, and then what happened after that.
Yeah, well, it's a very textbook story when you learn more about people who are porn or sex addicts. 90 to 94% of us have some kind of pretty deep, I don't want to say abuse, but extreme circumstances, trauma. You know, in my case, it was actually sexual and emotional abuse at the hands of a babysitter when I was young. And to deal with those issues, as you get older, you develop addictions, even though it might be years later. And to deal with that trauma that's repressed, and you may not even understand it's repressed, you tend to move into things. And mine became pornography, which I was first introduced to by a cousin of mine. And it also became drinking, which I did for the first time at a wedding. And as I mentioned on the last show, the first time I did both of those, I knew that I had found something special. I knew that I had found something that was going to be there for me in life, the way that people weren't there for me, the way that other things weren't there for me. These were going to be my friends who helped me get through the bad times. And then, you know, I carefully hid those addictions over the next 20, 25 years while I became married and had kids and built a great career that you just listed. But unfortunately, I made the decision to pull myself off of my bipolar medication when there was a bump in the road with my business starting to go downhill. I thought that despite the fact I'd been on these pills for probably about a dozen years and they were doing their trick, I think I romanticized the mania, the creativity, the energy that comes with being bipolar. And none of that happened when I pulled myself off of my pills. The addictions absolutely exploded. I became a drinker multiple times a day. I was looking at pornography every night. And with pornography specifically, I made the jump into chat rooms where I would essentially catfish women and get them to interact with me. And I tried to get them to behave sexually. Unfortunately for me, the Maine State Police showed up in early 2014 and informed me that one of those women was actually a teenage girl. Whether I knew or not, I'm not sure. I don't think I did, but I also do know that there are 15 and 16 year olds who look 25 or 26 and vice versa. Yeah. And so I don't blame anybody for my addiction except me. I don't blame the, you know, the circumstances of my mental health, which had deteriorated quite a bit. You know, I obviously don't blame the girl. I don't blame anything going on in my life. I blame myself because I was the one who pulled myself off of those, off of that medication.
Yeah.
I knew I had a pre-existing mental condition. So I try not to minimize or rationalize or anything about my crime. It was a crime. I went and served 6 months in jail for it after 2 years of intense rehab. So ironically, I went to jail healthier than I ever had been. When I was in jail, I met men who, despite the fact they had drug problems or despite the fact that they were, you know, domestic abusers or whatever the issue may be, so many of them had sex and porn issues that were also there that they were actually more embarrassed to talk about than their main issues. And that was when I decided to write my first book, because I realized when I was first arrested, being a former journalist, I wanted to read as much as I could about the condition. There was really not much out there for pornography addicts that wasn't of a academic nature.
Right.
And I wanted to write a book that, you know, any typical person on the street would understand. So I wrote The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About while I was in jail. It came out about a year and a half after I got out in early 2018. After I wrote that book and, you know, did the interviews like I did with you, what was happening was fascinating in that I was getting a ton of email and messages about the book, but well over half were from wives and girlfriends and close family members of porn addicts. I got some from porn addicts, really? But it was really the ones who were close to them. And I started to talk to them and exchange emails with them. And I realized, you know, two things. One was that there even fewer resources are out there for the loved ones of a porn addict. And the way to get to a porn addict might be through their loved ones. I make a joke that, you know, there is no porn addict who's going to buy a book of mine unless it's called "This Book Is for a Friend." I swear to God, it's for a friend. It's not really for me. But to get through to porn addicts, a lot of times that's going to take a loved one who sets boundaries or creates ultimatums. So I think this book definitely helps the woman who doesn't know exactly what she's facing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's also a secondary way to get at those addicts themselves.
Okay, so this new book was basically written for the partners of the porn addicts, right?
Yes. And it's an interesting story about how it came to be. I was not too many months after my first book came out, I was sitting and talking to my therapist. And I was telling her that I'm getting a lot of email, but I'm really nervous about giving anybody real medical advice because I don't have the schooling and I don't have the experience dealing with people in a clinical manner. I can tell them my story. I can tell them what I did, but I can't tell them what to do on a clinical level. Right. And she said, you know, what's interesting is that I sit across from people, whether they're alcoholic, whether they're sex addicts, and all the time, you know, I'll be trying to help them and they, you know, will get angry at something I say or get frustrated and blurt back at me, well, you don't know, you've never been an addict. And
that's true.
A light went on for me. So I had just done an interview with a licensed marriage and family therapist who kind of told me almost the exact same thing that my therapist told me. He works with couples that deal with sex and porn addiction. And a lot of times, both the female partner and the male would say, you know, you don't know what we're going through. You don't really understand this. And so I had the idea, just, you know, kind of struck me, what if we told both sides of this? There are resources out there for the partners that are written by other partners. So if you want to know, you know, another woman's story, you can find that book out there. But if you want to know what the male addict is thinking, or if you want to know what the professional expert is thinking, there that wasn't out there. So I told my writing partner, Tony Overbay, I said, let's just do this plain and simple. We're going to do Q&A format. Let's find the 60, 65 questions that are most asked, and you answer it like an expert. I answer it like a former addict, and we'll put it out there and see if we can do some good. So that came out a few weeks ago, and thus far the reviews are, you know, perfect.
Amen. Amen. But let me ask this question right here. Most porn addicts are males, correct? But are there female porn addicts as well?
Yeah, most reported porn addicts are males, but women are actually one of the top three groups of growing reported addicts, along with black males and members of the Catholic Church and members of the LDS Church are the third biggest growing ones. So, yeah, I think that there are plenty of female addicts out there. It's just finally being reported. And female addicts, it's still about one out of three or one out of four compared to men. But I think that today's easy access to pornography is only going to see those numbers rise.
Okay. All right. So this book could be for men, but mainly is written for women.
Well, you know, I think that this book, you know, my father, who, you know, doesn't have any of these issues whatsoever, you know, he supports me. So he bought a copy and I was just talking to him last night and he said that he was almost done it. And he thought it was absolutely fascinating. And that had nothing to do with me being his son because he read my first book. He knows my story. Mm-hmm. He just said that, you know, having a medical expert and then having a guy who was a addict talk about this stuff, and there are places where we disagree, there are places where we complement each other. Okay. And that's, he said that was just fascinating. He thinks that, you know, It could be just as important for any professional who doesn't regularly deal with people with porn addicts. He said that, you know, there perhaps even, you know, clergy members who have people come to them who say they have porn or sex issues, but they don't know, you know, they don't have the schooling to deal with it. He said, you know, this book is good for anybody who's ever going to deal with a porn addict, which I thought was, you know, from a guy who was a elementary school teacher, you know, to see that out of the book, that meant a lot.
Yeah, amen. So your book provides two unique viewpoints on this addiction to help the partners of the addict navigate through the trying times that their relationship's facing. Those two viewpoints are the professional clinical version and then your version?
Yes, yes. And I basically talk, I'll give my opinion on the question itself, and then I will also tell a, you know, usually couple paragraph story about how it applied to my situation when I was going through the thick of it.
Amen, amen. So how did you decide this book was needed at this point in time?
Well, again, you know, my first book, I felt like there was no resources for porn addicts. So I wrote that book with the idea that it wasn't a how-to, it was just, hey, you're not alone. Here's my story. And, you know, if there is such a thing as a not stereotypical porn addict, I think I was it. And I wanted to, you know, share that idea that there was no stereotypical porn addict. I wanted to share the idea that if you have a porn addiction, you need to get help because, you know, even though I was a quote unquote functional addict for 20, 25 years, it finally led to some very dark places. Mm-hmm. And if my addiction could lead to very dark places, anybody's porn addiction could lead to very dark places. Mm-hmm. So I got that one out there. And then, like I said, there was this, just flow of email that came into me through my website and other messages. I actually got a couple letters in the mail, which blew me away because I didn't know how people found my address. It was just, it was one of these things where I didn't recognize that that issue was there. And once I started in communication with several of these women, it was like, wow, I didn't know this problem was there because, you know, nobody's talking about porn addiction while nobody's talking about what happens to the partner. And unlike other addictions, you know, a wife of a gambling addict doesn't wonder what she's doing wrong. Or the wife of a heroin addict doesn't wonder if she's just not enough in the bedroom. Mm. The women who have to deal with porn addiction with their partners, they experience what's called betrayal trauma, which can be even worse than the effects of the porn on the addict himself. You know, these women did nothing wrong, but they just have trouble connecting the fact that, you know, this is a sick man who isn't doing this because I did something wrong. You know, they feel betrayed. They end up looking at their entire relationship as a lie, because if this man hid this issue, which is a very, you know, intimate issue, you know, dealing around sexuality, and if he was secretive and hid this for so many years, what else did he hide? Is our relationship, you know, is our entire relationship a lie?
And the partners basically tend to blame themselves for what's happened?
Yes, yes, very well. Not necessarily blame themselves. Some do early on, but even after they learn the ins and outs of it, they still feel betrayed. You know, usually they blame themselves at first, then they get the therapy or they learn the ins and outs of addiction, and most tend to get to a point where they understand the medical or the scientific side of it. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it doesn't still hurt and cut very deep. And, you know, it doesn't mean they still don't wonder about their partner. And it doesn't mean that they trust their partner all of a sudden. And it doesn't mean that there's not still a lot of work to do to rebuild that relationship. And we tackle all of this in the book. You know, it's one of these things where we are not necessarily pro-marriage. We're not anti-marriage. We're not telling people what they have to do and how they have to do it. We're just telling them what to expect as possible outcomes as they're going through this process.
What kind of questions, just a few right off the top of your head that you answer in the book that, you know, the female partners usually ask once they find out their partners are into porn addiction?
Yeah, well, the two biggest questions are always, is porn addiction real? And did I have anything to do with this? But what we do in the book is we actually break it down into different areas, like understanding the addiction from the scientific point of view, you know, dealing with the family and our safety, spiritual questions, you know, what to expect heading into recovery. You know, it's you know, straight up questions. We ask the questions very simply, you know, and anywhere from your, does counseling or inpatient rehab actually work, to, you know, I'm not trying to judge him, but I still feel like I am. What do I do? You know, some people say that I don't want him to disclose everything to me. Are they correct? Is it okay for him to watch movies with nudity from now on? You know, can I pray this away? You know, questions that pop up early on when a woman is or a partner is suddenly faced with this whole new world they have to deal with.
Yeah. Well, how about that question about watch movies with nudity in it from now on? Because I know as a former alcoholic, I can't even, you know, have a sip of anything. I have never tempted myself with doing it, you know, just to see what would happen type thing. Yeah. Personally, I just don't even want to go down that road.
Right. With drinking, I always tell myself, I've told myself, you know, I know that I could go back to drinking and it would be fine for a year or two. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be fine just long enough to fool myself that right. I could have more.
That's how I am. Yep.
Yeah. So never have another one. With the nudity question, you know, it is individualized, but I share my story, which is early on, the answer was absolutely no. Because I had a tendency where if I went to the movie theater, even if I was watching TV at home and I saw a particularly good-looking actress, I would, you know, make a mental note of who she was. And then I'd rush off to the internet, and there are a bunch of different websites that are databases for actresses. So I could look up where she had been nude in a film and go find a video clip of that. And that was one of my little habits that I would do. So, you know, I specifically had to stay away from that for a while. And cognitive behavioral therapy really helped with me with that, you know, where you constantly are examining your behavior and examining outcomes of your behavior. And I noticed about 6-8 months ago that I went to a movie with my son. I don't even remember what it was. And there was a very pretty girl in a bikini walking by. And my son actually said to me, wow, she's hot, because he's 16, 17. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what he thinks about. And I was like, yeah, she is. And it occurred to me right at that moment that I didn't care if I knew what movie she was in or any of that. I was like, well, it took me years, but I kind of reprogrammed myself. And now if I happen, I will not, you know, have the movie channels in my house,
right?
Because I don't want that to come across. But if I'm at the movies, or, you know, there's some nature documentary or something on, and, you know, I see a stray breast or something like that, that doesn't really faze me at this point, but it would have early on. Right. And we also stress that, you know, that may not be his thing. You know, there are a lot of different pornography addicts out there, and nudity in films may never have been an issue for him. And if it has never been an issue for him, it probably won't moving forward. But you may not want to tempt fate. And like I said, we removed the movie channels from our house, and that was enough for me. I also had to, you know, really condition myself to not go on the internet and look for that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was a matter of, yes, sitting down and being like, okay, do not go to this website. If you go to this website, you can get in trouble. You don't want to go down this road. And you say that to yourself enough times, it almost becomes muscle memory, to the point where I don't say it to myself anymore. I just sit down in front of my computer and do my work or do a show like with you. And that's that. My computer no longer represents a haven of pornography for me. And that's, you know, that's ultimately what recovery has to be, is that you move to a different mindset. in your life. So, yeah, it depends on the guy, but don't tempt fate.
Yeah, amen. What other types of questions do you answer in your book?
You know, like I said, you know, it's kind of all over the place. We talk a lot about relationships. You know, there's a question that I really liked, you know, if I stay with him, does it mean I'm in an abusive relationship? You know, and things from, you know, sometimes guys who are confronted will absolutely embrace the fact that they are a porn addict. And it's like a relief being found out. Whether they come to the woman and admit that they are, or the woman finds out, they're just thrilled that it's kind of out of the closet. Then there are a lot of men who will deny, deny, deny. And that's a much tougher situation. We go into that area, you know, where men deny and then continue with the issue. And we talk about what women should do at that point. You know, what are boundaries? How do you set up ultimatums? How can, you know, can I get him into counseling or therapy? How do I do that? What should I expect out of that? So there's a fair amount dedicated to the partner who finds herself dealing with a less than cooperative partner.
Hey everyone, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time for today's interview with Joshua Shea, as he's been sharing with us about his new book, He's a Porn Addict, Now What? It was written specifically for the spouses and partners of the people who are addicted to porn and possibly just coming out of the closet on it, or they've gotten in trouble for it. And it is so needful in today's society. And porn addiction is right up there with drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and things like that. And it affects more than just the person doing it. It affects the family as well. So go down below in the show notes, get a copy of the book, come back tomorrow. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.